Want a more fault-tolerant data center? Bring the availability of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Hey folks, welcome to this edition of TechNet Radio. I'm your host, Tommy Patterson, Senior Technical Evangelist out of the Southeast. You can find me at virtuallycloud9.com. Maybe you've been to one of my pro camps around, and the big topic lately that we've been, I think, just going crazy with, and I think it's one of the most, fastest taking off technology we've ever seen at Microsoft is Azure. And today with me is Laura Hunter. She is our principal IT enterprise architect, responsible for how we're doing authentication in Azure, so with Microsoft. So Laura, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. The sun is shining in Redmond today. I don't actually know what to do with myself. Again, my name's Laura Hunter. I have been with Microsoft for about 4 years, working in Microsoft's internal IT department that whole time. I'm a principal IT architect on the Identity and Access Management team. Prior to joining Microsoft, I was a Microsoft MVP for, I think, 6 or 7 years, focusing in Active Directory. So I've just kind of been an identity lady for really as long as I can remember. Used to be based on the East Coast, moved out to Redmond, stuck the cat in the belly of an airplane, and she still hasn't figured out what happened to her.
Oh, my goodness. Poor kitty. So where out on the East Coast? Where'd you come from?
Came from Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. All right. Okay. So I'm down in Atlanta. A little different accent going on. But exciting stuff. I mean, we have seen the tech ed announcements this week have been phenomenal. We got remote app going on in Azure now with in preview, which I think is a huge feature. But today we're talking about how people authenticate and how we can make authentication easier across the board, whether it's enterprise applications or some other type of authentication through third-party apps. And there's all kind of things that go on with Azure and authentication with Active Directory in Azure. So it's confusing for some folks when they first get into it, because we always have thought of Active Directory in the regular sense of the word or the term, domain. You've got a domain controller, you've got Active Directory installed. This Azure Active Directory is a little different. So it's got some feelers that go out into other places that we haven't seen before. So tell us, kind of define for us what that multi-factor authentication is, in the industry today, and then we'll jump into how things are moving along with Azure.
Sure, absolutely. So when you think about multi-factor authentication, everyone is familiar with logging onto your computer, logging onto your tablet with a username and a password. That's kind of what everyone thinks about when they think about authentication. And I'm sure most of us are familiar with the risks associated with using those. People can guess your passwords. Attackers can come up with these really, really authentic-looking malicious websites that will trick you into entering your banking password, for example, so it gets stolen. What multi-factor authentication does, not just within Azure, not just within Microsoft, but in the industry, multi-factor authentication is a way of increasing the security of how you log on to any computer system, your email, a website, an application. And you can do that either by using a strong replacement for a username and password, like a smart card, for example, or else you can add another element to how you log in addition to your password, like you might enter a username and password to log on to your webmail, but then before you're actually allowed to log on, you might have a text message, an SMS message that gets sent to your mobile phone, just so that we can, just so that that service can make sure that you really are who you say you are, and you aren't, some random dude who attacked your password.
Mm-hmm. So I've got to imagine that when we introduce that type of technology in the world, I mean, I'm not just Microsoft, but multi-factor authentication. I mean, a lot of applications were not written in the past to recognize that pause or that piece where I need that text message to come back to me, or I need that smart card to be inserted. Any kind of trouble there? I mean, we're past that now. The industry's moved on, and we're ready for that three-step process or two-step process, whatever it is.
So, I mean, there's a couple of different ways to think about implementing multi-factor auth, and as you say, some applications are more ready to play the game than others. And when we think about how Microsoft has historically handled strong authentication, multi-factor auth, our historical approach has always been, and this is going back decades now, has always been with physical smart cards. So anyone out there who's ever been to an industry event like a tech ed that's going on this week, you've seen the Microsoft folks like Chris and like me walking around with our blue badges strapped to our belts because we can't leave the house without our blue badge on our belts. You know, it feels like we've forgotten something.
And you those have worked.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sitting on my belt. I'm very happy.
Right.
And so, you know, those have worked for us for a really long time for, you know, high security operations like code signing and, you know, very sensitive financial information. But now we've got like all these cool new devices that we want to work on. I know, Chris, you're recording off of your Surface right now. We've got our Surface tablets. We've got our Windows phones, or maybe like we're home with the family and we want to work on our your wife's iPad or on your kid's iPhone or something like that. You know, physical smart cards aren't always going to work there. I mean, I look at my phone and I don't know where to stick plug a smart card in there.
Right.
But we still want to stay secure while we're using all these cool new devices. And so as an IT organization, as Microsoft IT, we're focusing on finding alternatives to physical smart cards that can provide better convenience, and so that can be used in a bunch of different BYOD, bring your own device scenarios, but while still allowing our authentication to be strong and thus our, you know, our data and our services to stay secure.
Mm-hmm. It's a shift, though, in the thought process. So we traditionally had an Active Directory, and that was the source of all of our authentication internally at Microsoft. But now this multi-factor piece plays into it. How does that work with Active Directory? What are the things that people might need to know there?
So it's actually really cool that Azure MFA, Azure Multi-Factor Auth, even though it's got Azure in the name, it actually integrates really tightly with your on-premises Active Directory as well as your Azure Active Directory. It kind of, it's almost blind to the difference. I mean, not really blind from a technical perspective, but, you know, you can use it in either case. You can take the phone numbers that you want to use with Azure MFA, and you can source that information from your on-premises Active Directory and, you know, use various mechanisms to sync that up to Azure MFA, or you can source that information directly from AAD. Azure MFA also integrates with not just with the cloud services, so not just with the Azure AD services, not just with the services like Office 365, but it also allows you to integrate Azure MFA with a number of different still on-premises services, things like virtual private networking, you know, VPN, remote desktop gateway. These things have very easy, very direct integration with Azure MFA. You can integrate it with if you still have web pages, web applications that are hosted either in an on-prem IIS instance or even something that's sitting up in Azure IaaS, Infrastructure as a Service VMs. You can integrate MFA there. You can also, which I think is a really killer scenario for us, is that you can integrate Azure MFA, that strong authentication, with Active Directory Federation Services, with ADFS.
Very cool. So the components you're talking about right now, let's say we go full ADFS. I mean, that's a proxy that comes from, you know, maybe some perimeter network. It could be in Azure in a virtual machine installed with connectivity back into your private on-prem data center that talks to the Active Directory controller. So as your authentication comes in, your request comes in, it actually gets filtered through that proxy back into your AD in your data center, and then the handshake takes place and it's passed back to let the application or whatever it is you're logging into know everything's okay. That's one way, right?
Correct.
Then we talk about DIR sync and pass sync, right? Password sync, where we can actually sync those accounts up to the perimeter side, so up to the Azure side, up into Azure Active Directory, or Intune, or any of those type of services in the cloud, and keep the passwords up to date. It's, you know, relatively synced up. I mean, we're not going to say it's real time, but it's pretty close. I mean, you can make it, force it and such. For a small business, I can imagine that trying to do something with ADFS may be a little bit too much. Just depends. I mean, that's the, I guess that's the perception. How hard is it really?
So when we were looking at integrating with Azure Active Directory and with O365, we were looking at exactly that choice. We can either use ADFS and Federation, or we can do as you described. We could do the password sync. In Microsoft IT's case, we had actually been using ADFS for a number of different scenarios well before AAD even came along. We've had ADFS running since like 2005. We're probably one of the earliest adopters of it, unsurprisingly. And so when AAD and O365 came along and we were looking at the decision point of, well, do we want to deploy ADFS or do we want to deploy password sync? Well, we already had ADFS deployed, so that, you know, operationally we'd already done that. You know, we already knew how to do that. To your point of, you know, people who are just starting out and maybe it's a smaller or medium business, you know, there's a lot of different ways to slice that onion. You can go the password sync route where that becomes, you know, the way that you keep your authentication in sync between your on-prem and your cloud. Or I really think, especially in the new version of Windows Server, this in Server 2012 R2, I really think that we've done a really good job, if I do say so, of making the install process and making the process of getting ADFS getting ADFS stood up and running a lot easier and a lot more approachable. I do agree that in the very early versions of ADFS, I made a lifetime out of talking about ADFS troubleshooting. My old joke was, if there's something wrong with your ADFS, it's PKI. But we learn from those lessons, and you know the product teams took feedback from Microsoft IT and from other customers, and we basically said, oh, please make this easier. And I think they've done a really good job in doing that.
So do I. We're doing a Windows 8 camp throughout the U.S. right now, and part of that camp gets into ADFS and doing work folders and workplace join and setting up those pieces. I think the most difficult part is still for the person who doesn't know certificates. I mean, that's it. It's pretty simple. The wizards are pretty easy. Password sync is a breeze if you're going to go that route. So very cool. So did you have any challenges, though, internally? I know we already had the ADFS infrastructure there, but we're talking about rolling out full-blown pretty much everything we do at Microsoft with 90,000 employees, plus we got Nokia coming on board right now. What was that architecture like? Are we talking 1,000 servers to handle this? What does it look like?
So the actual on-premises footprint ended up being pretty small, pretty easy. The advantage to Azure MFA is that the bulk of the actual work that's being done is actually being done in the cloud. The Azure MFA service is actually the part that's handling like all the SMS aggregators that are actually accepting the requests and making the phone calls and, you know, doing all the different, you know, managing all the different phone lines in all the different geos. So that ended up being, you know, not my problem. So that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. Kind of the thing we had to think about, because we're a global company from a physical infrastructure deployment standpoint, is because as a company we're really big on remote access, because, you know, we all work, you know, 12-hour days, we have no sense of work-life balance, so we're big on VPN, we're big on direct access. So we did very intentionally make sure that we had Azure MFA servers, so the on-premises component of MFA, we made sure that we had that co-located with all of our VPN concentrators in all of our different geos. So I've got, for example, I've got MFA servers in Redmond, in Dublin, in Singapore. But again, we're a big, ginormous global company. Not everyone's going to have to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that
was the challenge, though, is trying to figure out how many to lay out at each facility and what that load's going to look like, or what?
So I think that was the biggest challenge from a deployment standpoint. Interestingly, the bigger challenge and the thing that took even more time than that for us was actually had nothing to do with technology. It had everything to do with defining the right policies and defining how we were going to use Azure MFA. And so, like for a lot of customers, when they deploy MFA, they've never had strong authentication before. And so that thought process is, okay, today I have passwords. Tomorrow I'm going to have phone, and that's better. Whereas with Microsoft, we already had all these, you know, assurance levels defined around, you know, what our smart card enrollment processes look like. We have, you know, in some cases we have compliance considerations. You know, we have government contracts to think about. And so in our case, we needed to define what the policies are, what the policies and processes that we needed to use to allow people to enroll for MFA so that it would be a good security equivalent to our existing strong auth mechanisms. So, for example, at the time that we started deploying MFA, you know, we started deploying it, you know, a really long time ago before it was really released to the public. It's gone through like three name changes since then. But at the time that we started deploying, the out-of-box portal where users could register their phone numbers, you could only register your phone number on the basis of a username and password, which from an assurance level perspective, I can't register a strong credential on the basis of a less strong one. And so we worked with the product groups. We wrote a bit of custom code to fill in some gaps, and we came up with an enrollment process that our internal auditors, they walked through it, they reviewed it, and they signed off that yes, this is a reasonable equivalent to the vetting and to the assurance levels of how we enroll for smart cards today. So that was the unexpected, I would say, challenge was that it had very little to do with the technology. The technology was actually kind of easy, you know. Okay. Once we got all the right bits in place, it was, you know, making sure that all the policies and all of the how we were going to use this were in place.
Gotcha. So we have it in place now. Talk to me about the benefits. What have you seen? Are there some real, you know, big KPIs that came out of this that you can say, you know, we lowered support calls or, you know, things like that that help a business make a decision that this is something good for them, other than the security aspect?
Sure. So obviously you talk about the security aspect. One of the big benefits is that from a security aspect is if you make strong authentication easier, then you can deploy it more broadly. You can deploy it more ubiquitously without, you know, annoying the daylights out of your end users. You know, usually when you think about security, it's the dial. It's the, if you dial up security, you dial down usability. Well, in this case, we kind of get the best of both worlds. Right. But if we step away from the security aspect and just think about just what are the business benefits, it allows us to have strong authentication in scenarios that we couldn't have before, and that has actually achieved some business benefit for us. A big example of that is in terms of we're piloting it right now. We're deploying Azure MFA to enable self-service password reset. Mm-hmm. And so typically at Microsoft, you know, Chris knows this, I'm sure he's been through it. Typically at Microsoft, if you have a problem where you forget your password, we have a portal where you can reset your password, but you have to use your physical smart card because I need some way of proving who you are, even though you don't know your password.
Right.
Not all of our users get smart cards, specifically not all of them get the chips on the smart cards, like our vendors, our contingent staff don't all get chips on their smart cards. And so one of our biggest help desk call drivers was vendors calling into our global help desk. They actually had to call and talk to a human anytime they wanted to reset their passwords because we didn't have another solution for them. Well, mm-hmm. now we've got Azure MFA, and now we're and that's something that we're making available. We're going to be making available to the entire company, not just to full-time employees, but also to contingent staff. And I think that's going to, I think that's really going to end up driving down that really big call generator for us because we're going to allow our vendors and our contingent staff to be able to have a self-service capability that up until now has only been available to full-time employees.
And that's is that a website or is that an app you install? How does that work?
So right now we're piloting it as a website. We're looking at you know making it in an app so you can you know install it on your Surface because everyone likes to you know have that kind of convenience there. But yeah, stay tuned. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out.
So I know that we've got one of the new modern apps, and that's out for the virtual smart card, requesting gating virtual smart card, and specifically really helps on an RT device because that process was kind of kludgy, right? So you have this modern app out there. That's for the virtual smart card piece. You've got this website that you're in test with, and that's helped reduce you know calls in because now they can go to the site and do it themselves. It all provides a big convenience factor from getting on from just about anywhere, any device. Any concern about, did we miss anything that would cause concern even for, let's say you're a customer that has very few administrators, you don't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to watch and audit and keep up with who's doing what so that you can kind of keep up with what you may have exposed if you open this up?
So there are there's a lot of auditing capabilities in your on-prem Active Directory. None of that has changed. That's all mm-hmm. still there. And so, for example, if you light up multi-factor auth with your on-prem VPN, well, guess what? All your VPN logs and all your Radius logs are still there, and you know you can still troll them just the way you used to. For your Azure services, there are new capabilities coming out there every day. Every day in terms of being able to audit like what SaaS applications your company is using, and like maybe you know you've got some department somewhere that's signed up for some SaaS application that you know IT didn't even know about. Well, now you can start getting visibility into what kind of usage are these applications getting, what kind of data is leaving your network, whether it's being secured with MFA or not. And I think that is one of the really, to me, that's a very interesting way to exploit Azure's value as a platform for the enterprise. And so like when Azure first came out, the big thing was developers. You know, developers will go out there and, you know, learn how to play with this really new cool and oh cool, it's the new shiny. You know, I get to develop mm-hmm. these really cool things. Mm-hmm. But people like me, the enterprise admins, were kind of going, yeah, but I'm still sitting here and I still got a, you know, multi-billion-dollar business to run. What are you doing for me? And so what we're seeing now is we're taking the kind of the building block fundamentals of Azure that, you know, big scalability and data processing and, you know, scale up and scale out. And we're mm-hmm. applying and we're starting to apply that to, you know, enterprise problem sets, looking at, take the audit logs for my entire Active Directory, 200 and some odd domain controllers, a bunch of VPN servers, and apply the, you know, just the sheer processing power of Azure to take all of those logs, parse them all out, intercorrelate them, apply some intelligence to them, and spit out some, you know, meaningful report to me like, hey, did you know this department over there is shooting up like your entire whatever database out to the cloud once a day? You might want to, you know, go give them a call and say, hey, it's Laura in IT. What you guys doing?
Right.
You know, stuff like that. It's really cool.
Yeah. So, Phineas and Ferb, right? What you doing?
Yeah. What you doing?
So very cool. So I can't, you know, I still am in awe. I mean, I remember in NT4 days, we were migrating to Active Directory on Server 2000. And there was, you know, Active Directory was big then. You dig mm-hmm. into it now and the capabilities, the depth of what it can do. I just have a hard time thinking how would we do all this stuff without AD? It is, and traditional AD is what I mean. It is very robust, works very solid. Can't say enough about that. I think a lot of interest, and it's fun to watch the attendees at my pro camps because a lot of them think of AD as, here's my user, here's my group. Maybe at the OU level, but they don't quite understand the depth of AD until somebody shows them what it's capable of. And when I start going through the ADFS piece, they're like, wow, I did not know we could extend like this. And then we go into Azure and the eyes just get bigger and bigger. I think the sky's the limit for Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, and then the multi-factor authentication. So very cool. Any thoughts or anything we haven't covered today you want to talk about?
So I guess if you think about like someone who's just starting, I mean, I've been talking about, you know, how Microsoft IT is deploying ADFS. Well, we've had ADFS running for almost a decade. I'm one of like five people in the world who can say that, and the other four are working down the hall from me. So like if you're someone who's just starting out and you're just thinking about deploying Azure, particularly deploying Azure Multifactor Auth, kind of the best thing you can do as an enterprise when you think about it, I mentioned earlier that, you know, the technology was easy. The policy was what took a lot of, thought. Similarly, if you're just starting out, don't just think about Azure MFA as that cool standalone thing that, hey, my phone rang and isn't that cool. Think about what you're going to use Azure MFA to do, like what services you're going to integrate it with. So for Microsoft IT, what we didn't want to do, and the reason why we're, you know, still in pilot on a couple of these different capabilities, what we didn't want to do was send a big mailer out to the company, at everyone in the company, and say, hey, everyone, come and register your phone with MFA, except we don't actually have any services. They're ready to use it yet, because, you know, that wouldn't have done anyone any good, and it wouldn't have been any fun at all. And so, if anything, it's kind of like a lot of different cloud services in that it becomes a service management exercise, even more so than a technical one, of making sure that not just MFA, but also the services that you're going to be extending to use MFA, mm-hmm. whether it's with your on-premises AD or whether it's in Azure AD, making sure that all of those things are landing at an engineering level and being evangelized out to your end users according to, you know, a schedule that makes sense.
Sure. I mean, and if you look at all the services that you can integrate with Azure AD, I mean, we talked a lot about the Microsoft services, but if you've seen anything from Build and TechEd this year and the announcements we've made around Azure last year, we've embraced the third-party ecosystem bigger than ever. Mm-hmm. You know, Git, Dropbox, Salesforce. There are hundreds of different cloud services out there you can integrate with Azure Active Directory, then you can add that multi-factor onto. I mean, that piece is something that customers could not take on themselves. I mean, you think about what it would take, what kind of infrastructure and development team it would take to integrate all these different services that the users are demanding, right? So I saw something at a symposium just a month ago where they were talking about within the next 3 years, 90% of the IT decisions will actually be made by end users in what is going to take place. And the IT admin is more focused now on making those run properly and keeping everything running smooth. And then what's the best way for the business to take advantage of using those new technologies? You know, in the past, we kind of, as IT pros or admins, we kind of dictate to the business, here's that product or here's the solution that's going to do what you want. Mm-hmm. But now I think we're starting to see that end user come in and say, just read about this. This is perfect for what we want to do in our business. How do we get started? And now it's up to us to do that. And this process makes it safe. Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh yeah, and it used to be, and you know, you've had that job, I've had that job, where I am the IT admin. Here is your laptop, pre-configured with only the software you want to use, and locked down 6 ways from Sunday with a group policy object, because I love GPOs and I love figuring out how many knobs I can twiddle that will stop my users from doing something.
Right. And then
I'm fun that way.
They bring it back 3 months later and Strawberry Shortcake Game is still installed.
It will happen.
Yep. No matter how good you are. Mm-hmm. So very cool. All right. Any closing thoughts before we wrap up today's show?
So I think this is just a really exciting, it's a really exciting time to be in IT. I think there's a lot of capabilities coming. I mean, as you say, there are challenges to face because, you know, we have to think about what it means to be an IT person in this new world of, you know, you're not the grand dictator anymore. You're the one who's working hand in hand with the business, with your customers, trying to figure out how IT can provide business value. And you know some people say that's scary. Oh my god, I work in IT, I'm gonna be out of a job because of this cloud thing. No man, I'm riding this way for another 10-15 years. This is a great time to be in IT.
You have to ask yourself, do you want to be a cost center or do you want to actually be something beneficial to the company? And now I think is the time. So with that being said, I want to ask you something. And I got this off of one of our other radio shows that is done in the U.S. with PowerShell. They asked their attendees, if you could have one superpower or be a superhero, who would you be or what would you have?
So if I could be any superhero, and I'm going to be digging a little deep here, not everyone may get this reference, I would want to be Gambit from the X-Men. I would want to be Remy LeBeau, the Raging Cajun.
Because, very, very cool.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, everyone talks about, you know, when you ask what superpowers they want, I want to be Batman, or I want to have, okay, Batman's pretty cool, but, you know, I want to have super strength, or I want to be able to fly, this and that. If anyone who knows anything about the X-Men, if you know anything about Gambit, he's kind of got a kind of different sort of power. It's kind of subtle, which is that he can take, like, small objects and basically, like, blow them up, light them on fire. Like, not anything big. His big thing is a deck of cards, where he can take, like, you know, a deck of cards and, like, you know, blow one up and use it to, you know, do all these other kind of things. But if you just say that out loud, I can telekinetically charge small objects. Well, that's kind of a lame superpower if you put it that way. But, like, if you follow him in the comics, his superpower demands a certain amount of finesse and a certain amount of smarts to be able to use it in, you know, good ways to, you know, go and, you know, defeat the powers of evil. And he does that week after week, and I just really like that.
I can think of a good practical use for that. I mean, next time that my daughter drops her iPod Touch and breaks it, I could make it blow up on the spot, and that way we wouldn't get it fixed. Then I could get her a Lumia 520, and she'd be totally set.
So you're on something there.
Yes, I could use that power. That's very cool. Well,
Raging Cajun.
Very, very cool. Next time we have a show and you're on, I expect you to dress up as that superhero. So we look forward to that.
What have I signed myself up for?
Thank you for coming on the show, folks, listening in. It's been a lot of fun learning about authentication here with Laura. And, you know, as always, if you have any questions, hit me up at virtuallycloud9.com or you can email me, tommy.patterson@microsoft.com. Look forward to hearing from you. Thanks again, Laura, for being on the show.
Thank you very much.